This Thursday, 10 Democratic candidates for president will take the stage in Houston for another debate, and one of them will be Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, who joins us now as we continue our conversations with the candidates. Senator, welcome to Here and Now.
Well, thanks, Jeremy. It's great to be on.
So I was talking with a friend the other day about my upcoming interview with you, and he said, oh, yeah, Amy Klobuchar, what's her thing? So I'm going to put that question to you. As voters are looking at all these candidates on the Democratic side, what would you say is your thing?
What a great way of saying it. I am someone that has always believed that we need to cross the bridge of our politics to a higher plane. And I believe it more than ever now. Every single day where Donald Trump's trying to divide our country, we should be one America. And when you look at my track record of how I have run my campaigns where, yes, I get huge vote from Democrats. In fact, we had the highest voter turnout in Minnesota in the country with me leading the ticket. But I've also been able to bring in independents and moderate Republicans, including those that voted for Donald Trump in this last election. That's what we need to win, because I'm not running for president to be president for half of America or president of the Democratic National Committee. I'm running for president of the United States of America. We have to bring people with us. And we did it in 2018 with those House races around the country. And we can do it again if I am leading the ticket.
So when you say that you're ready to work with Republicans, or you're working across the aisle or attracting Republicans, some people hear that and say, well, she's a moderate. Is that how you would describe yourself?
I would describe myself as a progressive in a very important way. If you're going to be a successful progressive, you have to make progress. And I have passed over 100 bills where I am the lead Democrat. And I'd compare that record really to most of my opponents out there on the stage, because I'm someone that's known as a person that goes to work for their constituents and gets things done. Maybe that's not a viral moment, but that's what those viral moments are. They're just moments. They go away. People raise money off them for 24 hours. I am in this for the long haul.
As you look back to the election of 2016, which obviously the Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton lost, what do you think was the reason for that? Why did President Trump have success in winning that election?
There were a few reasons. No one had ever run against a candidate like President Trump before. Hillary was a great candidate. She would have been a great president. But no one had dealt with someone that would just try to distract people every day instead of talking about the issues at hand. I think we've learned a lot since that time. The first thing we've learned is you go not just where it's comfortable, but where it's uncomfortable. That's what I've done in all my campaigns. That's how I've won every single red congressional district every single time. The second thing that we've learned is that you have to have an optimistic economic agenda for this country. The third thing that we know is important is ignoring this guy sometimes, not running down every rabbit hole with him, standing up when he goes after immigrants, when he goes after people of color, when he does all kinds of evil things, but at the same time, not dwelling on everything he does. And the fourth is to use some humor. He can be absurd, and to ignore that is at your own peril. You can't pretend it's not happening. So when he was talking about Greenland and buying Greenland, I actually put out a tweet that did better than any of his that weekend, and that said this: what's the difference between Donald Trump and Greenland? Greenland is not for sale. Those are the kinds of things. You gotta hit him with some humor.
Well, did you think that it was funny that he used a Sharpie, apparently, and expanded where the hurricane was headed to include Alabama, or did you think that was sad?
For some people, I actually didn't do any joke on that because I think this hurricane is so deadly serious, and I had a little trouble myself making jokes about that. But he does things, of course, that aren't true. He doesn't deliver on promises. Coming from a state that he almost won, I have seen this firsthand. People voted for him. There are people that voted for him that voted for Barack Obama. And they voted for Donald Trump because they actually believed that because he had his name on a building, he could build things and help with infrastructure. They believed, and he said he was going to do that. They believed he'd bring down the cost of pharmaceuticals and do something to make it easier for people to attend college, that he'd have the backs of our farmers. He has failed at every single one of those promises. And now when he's faced with challenges, many of them because of his own making, with Iran enriching uranium, with Kim Jong-un launching missiles, with the trade war that's going on. What does he do then? He blames people. He whines. He whines about President Obama. He whines about the Federal Reserve had. And I can tell you, having been out in the Midwest, the hardworking people that took a chance and voted for him, they don't like whiners in the White House.
Let me just ask you about some important issues, starting with the opioid crisis, which I know you've talked about how your father has struggled with alcoholism. But what do you think is the root cause of the opioid crisis in this country? Why is it so bad right now? And what would you do immediately as president to deal with it?
As a former prosecutor, I went through a time where we didn't have much opioid addiction. And that has changed because the pharmaceutical companies pumped out a bunch of drugs, told people and doctors they were safe, and then people got addicted, many of them dying. That's why you're seeing all these humongous lawsuits all over the country. So I took on this issue early on, two Democratic senators, I was one of them, and two Republicans, and put out a blueprint that passed for dealing with the opioid epidemic in this country. What we need to do is, first of all, get people treatment that need it, and my plan pays for that, as well as paying for mental health beds, another big unmet need in this country. Then we have to go after those pharma companies so they stop people getting people hooked and track what these prescriptions are and what's happening. And then finally, make sure that we're not bringing in things like illegal fentanyl from other countries like China.
Why do you think it's been so hard to do that so far, to stop the fentanyl coming in?
Well, there were all kinds of issues with the mail service. I led a bill on that to go after that. And so we just have to stop it at our doors. And the addiction is so strong with opioids. And I predicted you would see this uptick in illegal drugs, because once you started to do what we have to do, which is limit the legal drugs from getting in the wrong hands or getting people hooked, then you're going to have people turning to illegal drugs. So it's not surprising. But we have to get at it. One of the ways you get at it is by good treatment and by more research on what treatment works, Suboxone, other things, so that people have an alternative. So when they get out of treatment or they get out of jail, if that's where they end up, that they actually have an alternative so they won't go back to the old life.
What would be the first overseas trip you would make as president?
I would go to Canada, close by, since right now in Minnesota I can see Canada from my porch. The president at times has pissed off the entire country of Canada. That's not easy to do. Then I would go to see our other allies, Europe, Mexico, and make sure that we assure them that we stand with them. One of the most memorable trips I ever took was with John McCain and Lindsey Graham, right before John McCain got sick, to the Baltics, to Estonia and Latvia, Lithuania, Georgia, and of course Ukraine. And we stood there on New Year's Eve in a blizzard, since I always stand in blizzards, with the president of Ukraine at the time. And McCain planned that trip after Donald Trump had been elected, but before he was sworn in, because he understood what we were headed into. He understood the value of standing with our allies and making clear to them we had their backs against a foreign country that actually tried to invade our election. I think those kinds of strong statements are going to be very important for the next president. And that's why in my first 100 days, I put forward over 100 proposals that would change the tone of our politics, stop the mean tweets, start getting actual things done and meeting these challenges on pharma prices, get back into the International Climate Change Agreement, get those clean power rules. I have literally outlined over 100 things you can do without Congress. I love Congress. I'm in a very good position to get things done through Congress, but we have to change the tone immediately, and a president can do that on her own.
Why do you think you got a C- on climate change from the environmental group Greenpeace?
That I don't know, because I do know that the League of Conservation Voters has endorsed my plan and gave a very strong statement for my climate change plan. And that also over the years, I've gotten a nearly 100% rating from the main environmental groups.
Finally, let me just ask you, as you look forward to the debate and then potentially the next debate and coming up to the Iowa caucuses early next year, when do you expect to see your numbers rise up to where they would need to be for you to be a competitive candidate for president come Iowa?
Well, I think this interview is going to change everything, because it's been so viral. You know, people keep saying you have to have this viral moment. And I point out that's what they are. Those are just moments, and they help people with fundraising for one day. But what you really have to do to get the American people behind you to win and to govern is to make a strong overarching case to this country of who can win and how we govern. And that is my case. And I will not stop making it. The way I look at this is I'm ahead of 18 people, including every governor and the mayor of New York City. And I have done that through hard work, being from a state where I was not a household name, but where I put together strong organizations in the early states, and I made my case to the people. And that is the reason that I am on that debate stage with a number of other people, one who is a former vice president. I am up on that stage because people have listened, and there are a group of people that want to see me heading up our ticket and in the White House. That's where we expand, and that's how we go forward. And the fact that I'm on two debates gives me even more opportunity to do that.
That is Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota running for president. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on, Jeremy. Thank you.
And you can hear our other conversations with presidential candidates at hearandnow.org.